Welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, and we have a great topic this hour. The biggest mistakes people make with money. Boy, oh boy, I bet we can line up the phone calls on this one. We have, once again, every week, Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, and Peg Webb, senior vice president at Wealth Enhancement and financial advisor. Hello and welcome to both of you. Peg, how are you?
Really good. Thank you, Susie. Good morning, and good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hi, Susie Jones. Always good to be with you ladies. And yeah, Susie kind of teed it up for us, Peg. We're going to talk about big mistakes that people make with money. There's might be a surprise on our list, a surprise or two. But before we jump into it, Peg, I got something I wanted to just mention really quickly. It kind of relates to the topic. It's not necessarily a mistake, but it really struck me yesterday that I wanted to mention this on the show today for clarity for our listeners. So I like to watch golf. I'm much better at watching golf than I am at playing golf. And sometimes I see commercials on golf of financial service companies, people in our space, people in our industry. And I've seen a particular commercial frequently where the suggestion is they emphasize the fact that they never sell commission products because they're a fiduciary. Well, Wealth Enhancement is a fiduciary, but we do sometimes sell commission products. And I don't know, the implication on the commercial feels to me like if you do that, somehow you're violating your oath to be a fiduciary. And I think quite the opposite is true. If you're a comprehensive financial planner and you're helping your client in all aspects of personal finance, sometimes there's going to be a strategy that the way the advisor is compensated is through commission, and that shouldn't be a negative thing or a dirty word, and it certainly doesn't violate our oath to be a fiduciary. Let me give you a very specific example. Part of the standard operating procedure at Wealth Enhancement is we might analyze somebody's life insurance for them and determine, is it the proper amount? Do you have too much insurance? Do you maybe not have enough insurance? It's not just necessarily because we're going to try to quote unquote sell you more life insurance. Oftentimes we do the analysis and we determine the policies you have are sufficient, but there's ways that you can make them more efficient. We tell them things about the policies that they already own and didn't buy from us, and we maximize the efficiency of the policy, and they learn things that their agent never told them about how their insurance works. But sometimes in doing that analysis, we determine that we think a client should perhaps have additional death benefit, and we'll explain that to them and why we think that's true. And oftentimes the client will see the logic and say, yeah, I can see that makes sense. I should probably get some more insurance. And if they do that through us, our way of being paid is if we sell them the policy. That doesn't violate our oath of being a fiduciary. We're being value added. We're enhancing the relationship. We're helping them in an area where maybe they're not getting any help, and it doesn't always mean selling more insurance. Oftentimes I've told people you have too much life insurance, or you have the right amount, but you're paying too much. So as a personal example, I put myself to the test on this about 7 years ago. I wanted to go get some more term insurance for reasons I won't bore everybody with, but I went and I got a quote from a company called SelectQuote and a company called Term Provider, and I got a quote from Wealth Enhancement Group. Wealth Enhancement came back with the best rates, the cheapest premium, and the easiest underwriting. I didn't have to jump through as many hoops through the company that we found as compared to the others. So I put us to the test, and we passed, and I got a term insurance policy through Wealth Enhancement. And yes, we got paid to do that, but that was huge value added to me. And I see these commercials, and it infuriates me that they're implying that if you sell commission-based product, that somehow you're not an honest, efficient advisor. And I think the opposite is true. If you're in this industry and you're not helping your clients with that kind of stuff, you can't really call yourself a financial planner, I don't think. I'll get off my soapbox, Peg, and give you a chance to comment.
Yeah, I didn't know that you were going to talk about this today, but I'm glad that you brought it up, because the difference to me is the word comprehensive. So comprehensive advice versus just money management. And when we talk about comprehensive wealth management, that means our roundtable. In our roundtable, we've worked so hard, Bruce, to build this roundtable of experts. And, you know, that includes that insurance that you talked about. It includes financial planning. It includes tax strategies. Investment management is part of it. Estate planning, retirement planning, trust services. That's what comprehensive planning is all about. And I understand, Bruce, why you get heightened about this, because it's not telling the whole story is how I would conclude that to be. So I'm so proud of the fact that we are comprehensive planners and we can look at everything and not feel like we're just have to stay in this one lane. You know, as a fiduciary, we are in all the lanes helping clients. So,
okay, thank you. And I just had to get that off my chest. Now, probably be watching golf again today and see the same commercial, but now I'll feel better when I watch it. So, Susie mentioned we're going to talk about biggest mistakes people make with their money, and the lead in here. Peg, I think a lot of listeners and a lot of people that aren't in our space probably think that the biggest mistake people make is spending too much and run the risk of running out of money before they die. We've talked on the show before about how many Americans have balances on credit cards and they spend more than they bring in and they spend more than they can afford. And there's no question that in society that is an issue. But I have found, and I think you'll agree with this, that with my clients, I don't see that very often. For whatever reason, the people that come in to see us and engage us in a relationship are more financially responsible, and they aren't typically overspenders. Now, on occasion, I've had to have a meeting where I've had to look a client in the eye and say, at the rate you're spending, you're probably going to run out of money before you die. You need to slow down. Let's talk about, you know, how we can do that. And it's been suggested to me before that that's probably a hard conversation to have, but it's really not, because they'd rather know now than 10 years from now when they're actually running out of money. So it's not a hard conversation, but I don't have that very often. What I have a lot more often, way more frequently, and this is going to surprise some listeners, is I have people that are the opposite, that aren't spending their money and they can afford to do it. And we have to encourage them to go out and enjoy life because they worked a long time and they worked really hard and they saved, and now they should enjoy the fruits of their labor. I see that way more often. Peg?
Yeah, and I do too. And I think it's bottom line. I think it's, how that particular generation grew up and how they were kind of taught to just save and save and save, and they haven't really crossed that line where to have this kind of mental freedom to go spend. So it's kind of interesting too, as advisors, you know, we're sending out these paychecks to people all the time because we say, go enjoy, you know, life is short. And I think the reason we do that, Bruce, is because we live through all these clients' lives, and we want them to go out and do what they probably, a little part of their brain is saying, oh, I wish I could. And we're out there cheerleading, saying, go do it. Because traditional financial planning kind of focuses on this accumulation and saving and diligently investing and you know, trying to balance the fact that, is that money going to be the same dollar down the road? You know, so we got this inflation going on. So I think it's good to have somebody that you really trust that will tell you, go spend. And I found, Bruce, that I'm probably one of those people that say, go enjoy. And many of the clients have had a lifetime tragedy event or something in their family. And then I really tell them, you know, you should go enjoy. So here's an example. A client of mine, they have been with us since day one, right? So they have a $30 million net worth. And I have a struggle getting them to spend some of that money. And we even created some strategies that would upon their death, some life insurance planning would take care of the children and all the grandchildren that they have but yet they're driving old cars and they're really frugal. Now, I don't think, Bruce, that I can actually change these people, but boy, do I work at trying to get them to go on the next cruise, do what you want to do, and it's almost like giving them permission to go spend. Bruce?
Yeah, I like what you said, that I think it's partly generational, and I think it's partly, you know, the psychology. People that do a good job of saving and investing have something innately within them that not everybody has, and they're very good at saving and investing. They're very good at being fiscally responsible. But then the flip side of that is, think about it. You work for 35, 40 years, whatever it is, all those years you're contributing to a company retirement plan, you're making other savings, other investments, you're building a nest egg, and then you flip the switch and you not only stop contributing to those plans, but now you're going to pull money out of those plans. That's a tough psychological hurdle for a lot of people to get past. And Peg, to your point, I've lost count of how many times over the years I've done financial modeling, run cash flow projections, showed them you can start spending, you can spend this much, here's what's going to happen to your net worth, you're not going to blow through your money, and they still don't believe it. No matter how much math you show them, in their brain, they still feel vulnerable if they spend too much. Beck?
Yeah, and I have several clients that have this number in their head, and they've had this number in their head for a decade of time. And let's just, as an example, I want $1 million, and then I'm going to, you know, open the checkbook and start doing things. and until they get that baseline of $1 million, they just don't feel like they should be spending, and they feel like they still have a chance of running out of money. So that's real, and I think you're right. It's psychological in a lot of ways. The other thing people do is, they tend to, because they have required minimum distributions, so they're, you know, 73 years old or older, or it used to be 70 and a half, and they take that, and they feel good about that. Like, the government's actually making them take money out, and they feel good about that. They have their Social Security. They may even have some kind of a insurance product that gives them some type of a fixed income that they can rely on. But then all the other kind of variable accounts, they don't want to touch those, and they still have a fear of running out of money. And I'm a woman, and we still have this kind of fear. And I always said this in the workshops I did, that there was this picture, Bruce, of this, they called her a bag lady under the bridge, like she had no money. And this picture was, you know, I'm talking about like 30 years ago, it was just constant where they were showing us this and we had to save, and they were marketing to women. But I still believe that's kind of in women's heads, that I may be the survivor of the couple and I need to be really cautious, because if one of you pass away earlier and that particular person kind of ran all the money or watched all the money and communicated with the advisor, then they feel, too, psychologically, that they can't spend today. Bruce?
Peg, you know, Susie mentioned this, too, and we call the show today, you know, mistake, big mistake. And I can envision listeners right now going, okay, so I don't want to spend my money. How is that a mistake? Why is that a mistake? But where I come in is, and I've seen this countless times, and so have you, people do want to do things. I don't like the term bucket list, but if I say that, everybody knows what I mean. There's things that you want to do before you leave this world. It might include travel. It might include something with spirituality. It might be something with family. But there's things that you want to do, and one of the mistakes is people put those things off because they think they've got time. I'll do it, you know, I'll do it eventually, but I want to make sure I have enough money or whatever. And what I've learned is none of us is guaranteed tomorrow. I've seen this countless times. I've known people that are healthy one day and the next day they're not. They get a cancer diagnosis, or there's an accident, or there's something goes wrong, and they never get to do those things. And I think it's sad, and I think it is a mistake, and I think it's almost tragic that you work so hard, so long, do such a good job accumulating these assets, and then you never enjoy it when you retire. And I know you're better at this than I am. You always talk about the go-go years and how we have way more energy, way more, you know, ability to go do those things early in our retirement, say in our mid and late 60s, than we do in our late 70s or in our 80s. Peg?
Yeah, there is no question that the go-go years are kind of that first 10 years. And once again, I just encourage people to go do what you want to do. And by the way, if your partner has been bugging you for years about, you know, maybe going on a riverboat cruise or travel somewhere, hopefully you'll say yes if you feel confident. And if you don't feel confident, then you need to get an advice from someone else that will give you the kind of permission to spend. The other thing is the reason I said the next 10 years is, you know, once again, we live through all these clients' lives, and I can tell you that in their mid-70s, they're a completely different people. Now, I'm not saying everybody, but we're just saying we've witnessed families and clients that that just all of a sudden said, guess what happened to me, just like you said, Bruce. So what do? We really encourage spending now, but we also have to use some type of a exercise or some illustration to prove it to people too. So we have what's called a retirement reality check. And that's actually just a retirement income planning tool. We've actually created, it's a proprietary tool of ours that we take, you know, the investment stats and we put all the your holdings and what your fixed income is, your Social Security, or if you have a pension, that kind of thing. And then we do some projections just to show, well, how much could you pull off, you know, your retirement assets? And a lot of times clients feel safe if they only take the dividend. Like psychologically, they just want to take the dividends. That's kind of an old-fashioned thought too, but we walk through the client with that. And then this gives a ballpark estimate of what you could take out, and Wealth Enhancement Group has the confidence that you could take this out for a number of years. Now, it also has to be refreshed, you know, so when you go in for your reviews, it's something that we continually talk about. You can't just dip it in gold, kind of like baby shoes. It's something that you're going to have to work on, you know, for years to come. But yet it's given confidence, Bruce, to the clients that I work with to go spend some money.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to mention, and I know we've got a couple minutes left, Susie, one of the things that we do that differentiates us from others in our space, not everybody does this, everybody in our space, everybody in our industry can help people grow their money, can help them invest their money. We help our clients spend their money. Retirement income planning, I like to call it the Wealth Enhancement Smart Money Strategy. The retirement reality check is part of that. But Peg, a lot of people don't spend their money wisely. For example, this has happened again countless times in my career. Somebody wants to go buy a big ticket item. Maybe it's a new vehicle. They retired and they're going to reward themselves. And they think, I don't want to finance it and pay interest charges. I've got $1 million in a company retirement plan. I'll just draw the money out of there and I'll pay cash for this vehicle. Well, if you're going to buy a $50,000 vehicle and you're going to net $50,000 after you pay the taxes, you might have to take a $70,000 withdrawal out of that retirement plan. That might not have been the smartest way to spend that money. There might have been other money that you could have spent, and or maybe it actually would have been cheaper or more fiscally responsible to finance, because the interest charges that you would have paid would have been a drop in the bucket compared to the taxes that you paid. But that's something we help our clients do, make sure they're always spending the smartest money first. Peg, last word to you this half of the show.
Well, the only thing I would say is if you do have a financial advisor, you know, sometimes they're compensated to keep all the wealth at the firm instead of sending it out. And I'm so proud of the fact that we really want clients to enjoy the money, and they've worked so hard, and then also provide, you know, a future for their children and grandchildren as well.
Anything else on the topic today that you wanted to hit on? We've got about another minute, or do you think we covered it?
Well, the one thing I always think of is kind of at the core, wealth is just a tool, right? It's not just for security or giving legacy, but it's actually for, and I really rant on this, it's for, you know, having joyful days, having purpose, having presence, doing things that you want to do. And I'm telling you, Bruce, I don't know how many times I have to really convince people to go do it. And then we get the thank yous. We do. We get the thank yous. Thanks for, you know, giving us the confidence because they had a great time and they want to share all the details about what they did.
And isn't that rewarding when we get that to happen? That's why we do what we do. Well, so in the second half, Susie, listeners can drive the show with questions, but also if anybody has a story or an example of a mistake that they made that they want to share or something smart that they did they want to share, those would be great also. But any and all financial questions, listeners can drive the second half of the show.
That's,
Susie?
Yeah, wonderful. Let's get that number out there, 651-461-9226. Again, I'll say 651-461-9226. You can call us on that line. You can also text us with your questions. 651-461-9226. We're back right after this. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, of course, along with Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement and Financial Advisor, as well as Senior Vice President of Wealth Enhancement and Financial Advisor, Peg Webb. Welcome back to the second half of the program, the biggest mistakes people make with money. Do you want to recap before we jump into some questions, guys?
Yeah, really quickly. Thank you, Susie Jones. So again, Peg, we talked about biggest mistakes, but what we really focused on is this this idea that I think, again, might come as a surprise to a lot of people, that in our experience as advisors, we encounter a lot of people that are reluctant to enjoy the fruits of their labor, their years of hard work, their diligence at saving and investing and doing a good job of accumulating money, and then they never enjoy it. They get to a point in life where they can enjoy it and should enjoy it, and they're reluctant to do so for any number of different reasons. And we have to kind of coach them up. We have to do some financial forecasting, retirement reality check, prove to them that they can afford it, and help them spend the smartest money first. That's really what we focused on. Was there anything else in terms of, you know, broad topic of financial mistakes or any other stories or any other examples that you wanted to hit on before we get listeners involved, Peg?
Well, the only thing I would, this is really kind of a repeat in that I think we have been on this earth for quite some time, and we do have some biases, or there's some things that were just drilled into our brain based on our parents, or people have watched other people that maybe struggle, but yet we also tend to tout, well, you've got to save your money because you just don't know how long you're going to live. So bottom line is, I think that's hard to figure out all by yourself. I just feel like you should reach out to people that you trust, or get a somebody like a financial advisor or somebody that would give you some conviction that you could go do this. Because once again, I witness a lot of people that are just kind of hoarding their money. And what I can tell you is when the next generation gets it, and a lot of times they're already older too, they're 60 or 70 years old, they're a little disappointed that they didn't get some of that wealth earlier to be able to lose, you know, live their lives and their grandchildren's lives. They could have changed them. So my advice is, if you do feel confident, I know it's not something that comes natural to people, especially in the Midwest, to just start gifting money to people, your family, and watching them experience what they do with that money. And you might find that it's actually a very heartwarming thing to do, watching them maybe have a different life. And I've seen lots of clients, you know, helping with school for grandchildren. You know, that's become so expensive. So it's things like that, Bruce, that I feel that we do a good job coaching clients and give them kind of a license to spend.
Yeah, Peg, and on that point, and I'll finish up with this and throw it back to you, Susie. Whether helping your family, helping kids, helping grandkids, taking a trip where you pay for the family, getting a new vehicle or a boat or joining a golf club or getting even a second home, or building a pole barn. I've had all these things in my career where people talk about doing these things. And I'm like, well, here, we've got the money. And they're like, well, yeah, but then the money won't be there anymore. And I'm like, well, if you're not going to use it for this, what are you going to use it for? Isn't this exactly the reason that you saved and invested and worked so hard for 40 years? If not this, if not now, then what? Then when? And when we have that conversation, oftentimes I see the epiphany, I see the light bulb go off, and they're like, yeah, you're right. This is exactly what I was saving and investing for. And again, as an advisor, I cannot tell you how satisfying and gratifying and how it makes my heart happy when we have those situations like that where we give people permission to enjoy their retirement. All right, Susie, let's let listeners take us the rest of the way.
Okay, 651-461-9226. That's the number you can call with a question, or you can text 651-461-9226. A texter writes, our credit score is 850. We have several open credit cards with a high limit, and it's affecting our income-to-debt ratio, although we have no credit card debt. If we close the extra cards, how long does it take to make our income-to-debt ratio better?
Well, Peg, I'm not sure exactly, you know, I know what income-to-debt ratio means, but in the case of having an open line of credit but no balance on it, I wouldn't think that impacts your income-to-debt ratio. The other thing I would say, just to tee this up for you, Peg, is a credit score of 850 is a phenomenal score. I don't think they have anything to worry about. But having said that, if you've got open lines of credit that you don't ever intend to use, it's probably in their best interest to close those lines of credit. But, Peg, do you understand what they're trying to ask us?
Well, I think, and this actually happened to me too, because I have cards where I have a huge amount of money that I could borrow. And they actually do kind of dock you for that, because we have the ability to go buy something huge with this credit card, and that might change. 850, I think, is the maximum. I think that's the top tier that you can possibly have. And so I have closed all these miscellaneous credit cards. I have two that I really use. And I find that my credit score stays higher, because otherwise, if I have these huge lines of credit, once again, and just go in there and say, okay, I want to take out 100% of my borrowing ability, then your credit score is going to go down. And I think with this credit, I'll just say one more thing. I think everybody needs to get their credit scores and go look at what is on your report. You know, not all of you are out there are at 850 at the top, but you're going to want to understand how much debt, you know, how much debt availability you have and money that you could get. Because I'm just a little bit worried too about the internet and the people that are penetrating our details about ourselves and that kind of thing. It's just a good maybe thing to do. Maybe there's nothing to do this summer, and just go through it and kind of clean it up first.
Yeah, I think you're talking about hackers or people that'll infiltrate your security and get at your personal information. Yeah, the 850, I think that's max score. That's an incredible score. But here's the reason it matters. I'll just add this for listeners. The reason your credit score matters, and Peg's right, I bet a vast majority of you, if you went and checked your report, there's mistakes on there. There's things, there's still an old credit card that you closed, you know, years ago that's still showing up on there, and you're going, I closed that account. I don't use that card. You should make those corrections. But the reason the credit score matters is because it can determine whether or not somebody will even make you a loan or not if you need to borrow money. And then also it can impact the terms and conditions or the interest rate you get or the over the time frame that they'll amortize a loan. So the credit score matters. And I think kind of the magic number, I could be wrong about this, Peg, I think 720 and above is considered, you know, a good credit risk. But if you're below 720, you should try to build up that credit score and get over 720. But yeah, to the texter, 850 is a phenomenally good credit score. I don't think they have anything to worry about. But yeah, check those credit reports. I bet almost everybody has got something on there that could be corrected. Susie?
What do you do if you have credit card debt and you want to start spending your retirement money?
Yeah, great question, Peg. What do you tell clients?
Well, it depends. We talked a little bit earlier in the show. Bruce brought up, you know, having most of your money in a tax deferral status, meaning you have a big IOU to the IRS on IRAs. And so if clients come in and I'm well aware of that they have some debt, maybe it's on a car or it's a low interest loan trying to get them to buy something over a time period, then I'm not going to take money out of that IRA to pay that off. If there's double digit percentages on debt out there, then I may consider it. And even with the stock market the way that it is today, you know, we've kind of almost achieved back where we were, then I may say, okay, now let's take that out because I need to do kind of a rebalancing anyway. You're over on your equity side versus your fixed income side, things like that. Bruce?
Yeah, again, and sometimes you can give clarity to these issues of personal experience. So the other thing I would say that's not exactly the same question, Susie, but related, I'll get maybe a younger person in their 30s or 40s, and they want to start investing. They want to invest with us. And when we do a deeper dive into their situation, we do an analysis, we uncover that maybe they've got credit card debt on one or even more than one credit card, and they're fairly significant balances, and they're paying a high interest rate. I might very well give the advice to that person. And again, we're a fiduciary. We'll always give you our best possible advice. I might say, look, as much as it's admirable that you want to start to invest money, and we certainly at Wealth Enhancement like to help people do that, your best investment right now might be to liquidate that bad debt, that inefficient debt. You've got balance on credit cards at, you know, 10%, 12% interest rate. If you invest that money, I can't promise that we'll get you a higher return on investment than the cost of that debt service. Your best investment is to eliminate that debt. When the debt's gone, then come see me again and we'll talk about investments. So it's a slightly different question, but it's related. And then again, using a personal example, and I've said this on the show before, it might surprise some listeners that I personally, I'm just speaking for myself, I have debt. I have a mortgage. Now, I could pay off that mortgage on Monday morning, tomorrow, if I wanted to, but the interest rate is so low. And when I look at the various places where I have my assets, every single one of them, with the exception of I have a non-interest-bearing checking account with not a lot of money that I use, you know, put and take for living expenses, every place else where I have money, I'm earning a return on investment higher than the cost of the debt service. So to me, to go pay off that mortgage would be economically counterproductive because I'd have to take money from somewhere where I'm earning a higher rate of return than what I'm paying in interest on that mortgage. So I choose not to pay off that debt. That's what I would call the difference between good debt and bad debt, or efficient debt versus inefficient debt. Not everybody agrees with me on that. I have a lot of clients that do want to be debt-free. They do choose to pay off the mortgage. There's a psychological component to that that feels better. And I've admitted, I think, to Peg in the past, maybe even the listeners, if I retired, I probably would liquidate that debt. I probably don't want that mortgage after I retire, Although that said, we have a lot of clients that are retired and still have a mortgage, and they can still have a great lifestyle at retirement. We just have to factor in that mortgage as part of their cost of living. So we figure out what are their expenses, what are their assets, how much more can they spend beyond the financial obligations that they have to make, car payment, mortgage payment, taxes, insurance, and so forth. So you can always have a mortgage if you want to, but a lot of people don't want to at retirement. But again, in terms of retirement income spending versus having debt, like Peg said, you have to look at the efficiency or the inefficiency of that debt and the efficiency of the assets where you're going to draw income. And that's what, you know, again, I call retirement income planning. And clients that can't figure that out for on their own for themselves, we help them make that determination to make sure they're being as efficient with their money as they can at retirement. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, I followed Peg's advice from last week and watched the movie The Ultimate Gift. So lots of O's, Peg. Thank you. So good. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I actually brought it up because I myself had watched it so long ago, and I just ran into it called The Ultimate Gift. And it's a grandfather that actually passed away and left a video, which I actually really like that idea too. Left a video of things that if you wanted to get part of the inheritance, this was a very successful person, then you had to go through these series of gifts. And I'll give you an example, the gift of work. So he suggested that you learn how to work and earn money. And you might think this sounds really trivial, but when I look at the younger generations today, and it doesn't have to be work as the number one priority, but it needs to be something that's satisfying, not only just for yourself, but what are you doing to make the world better kind of thing. So there's like 10, I think there's 10 different gifts that he goes through and says, okay, you need to do this one. And when you accomplish this, then you get to go to the next one. But you don't get any of this inheritance until you go through each one of these gifts. So it's a great, great movie. And of course, it's a book that you could go on Amazon and look for as well.
Peg, I haven't watched it yet, but I did write it down, and I'm committed that I will find time to watch it sooner than later. Thank you for the tip. Hey, the other one I wanted to bring up, and this was actually a text that we got last week that we didn't have time to get to, but I want to bring it up, Peg, because variations of this question come up so often. But I think I'm reading verbatim. Somebody texted, would it be reasonable to expect a return comparable to the S&P over a 10-year period? It's this question all the time about what's a good return on investment, or what can I expect as a return on investment? We get variations of that question all the time. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, we do always talk about that's the past, right? It's easy for us now to look at the stats, what's the average return. But in my career, and I probably yours as well, Bruce, I always kind of went with this 7%. That the equities, you know, over a long period of time were 7%. Now, that's probably have changed, but it's over a long period of time, because people come in and they want to compare to something. And so equities carry a lot more risk, right? The stocks carry a lot more risk, and you should be rewarded for that over time. What I do like is, even though inflation is a big deal, that our fixed income side has been giving us good rates of return, you know, on our bonds and our money market and on our treasuries. There was a long time frame there that we weren't getting anything on being a conservative saver. You know, you had to almost go into the equity market to get some return. So we've had several years now, and our clients do like that, and my friends like that money markets are still paying something. But I think it's going to change. I think, you know, the Fed decided not to lower interest rates, but there may be a time, and it might still be this year. The experts out there that are guessing, half of them say there's going to be a cut and half of them say there's not going to be a cut. But what I'm encouraging people to do is to maybe lock in some of that fixed income, because I do believe interest rates will probably go lower at some point. I just don't know when. Bruce?
Yeah. I lost my train of thought. I had something really smart I thought I was going to say, but I forgot.
I hate when that happens.
I'm showing my age. No, it came back to me. So, again, I always tell people that when you try to look at your return on investment, you have to compare it to the right thing. You have to compare apples to apples. So the texter specifically said, can I expect you to do as well as the S&P? My answer would be yes, if that's our goal. There's a portfolio at Wealth Enhancement that I invest in personally that the S&P is the fair apples-to-apples benchmark to compare it to. And I think over the last 10 years or so since I've owned this portfolio, we've outpaced the S&P by, I don't know, 3 or 4% a year. We've done much better. But I'm not going to recommend that portfolio to everybody. So the return on investment that we shoot for as an advisor is whatever return that we think you need to hit your goals and objectives, to be able to retire when you want, with the income that you want and the lifestyle that you want. We spent this whole show talking about spending our money at retirement. I want to recommend investments that get you that rate of return, probably. There's no guarantees in this world, but probably get you the rate of return you want with the least amount of risk possible. So it sounds like we're waffling or evading the question, but it's hard to answer a return on investment question because it's different for everybody. You all have different needs, wants, goals, and you don't all need the same rate of return. This idea that when we invest, the goal is to get the highest rate of return we possibly can just isn't right to me. We don't start with that premise. So I think most people that think they want to maximize their return, then you say, how much risk are you willing to take to try to get that return? Then you get a different answer. So we get that question a lot, Susie, and that's just one variation. And I know I overtalked now and lost my train of thought. Now I used up all our time. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. We appreciate your wisdom and Peg's wisdom and everyone for being part of the show today. Remember, Bruce, here in Minnesota, we have a heat advisory, so we want to remind folks to take it easy out there. And if you did not get your question answered today, Peg and Bruce and all the fine folks at Wealth Enhancement are right there for you to help with all of your questions. They have a phone number that answers 24 hours a day. You leave a message there and they'll call you back and set up a free consultation. 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE, or email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great day.